Good morning and welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the largest segment of society. To those of you who have come to realize that the world's political, religious, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, rotten to the core, even counterproductive. I am Yada. Our number, if you'd like to join us anytime over the next 2 hours, toll free, 877-376-45. Some of you are still in the midst of celebrating the first three Moed Mikra, the invitations that Yahweh has provided, where he gave us the means to not only be called out and to meet with him, but to spend eternity with him, perfected and adopted into his family. These 3 days are Pesach, Matzah, and the Bikurim. Some of you celebrated Pesach, Passover, beginning on Thursday evening and through the day on Thursday, Matzah on Friday evening and throughout the day on Friday, and throughout the day on Saturday, the Shabbat, and then Bikurim on Saturday evening and throughout the day on Sunday. And you were amazed that 80% of Americans and a slightly lesser degree of Europeans are fooled to the point that they still observe Easter, a holy and completely pagan holiday that annoys God no end. These, the 3 days, for those who have been listening to these programs, who have read Introduction to God or YadaYah.com, IntroToGod.org, or an Introduction to God.com and YadaYah.com, recognize that these 3 days represent Yahweh's portal or doorway to his home, which means a portal to increased dimensions, the first of those dimensions being freed in the dimension of time, making us immortal, to the dimension of perfection, where we are very much like energy, completely cleansed in his light, and to our adoption, where we are members, children, in Yahweh's family, and inherit all that our Father, who just happens to be the creator and thus owner, if you will, of the universe, has to offer. That is what these 3 days represent. And seven Shabbat, endorsing, affirming the promise of the Shabbat, of the plan of seven, we will be enriched and empowered with his spirit. These are what these days represent. They collectively, these first four Moed Mikra invitations to be called out and meet with God, collectively, they provide all five benefits of the covenant to become immortal, to inherit the fourth dimension and therefore be unlimited in time, to reflect Yahweh's light and therefore become perfect, and thus be able to enter his presence and to be very much like him in his presence so that we can relate to him as an individual and to be adopted, now that we are immortal and perfected, into his covenant family, so that seven Shabbat from now we can be enriched with his teaching and guidance and empowered by his spirit. Beats the living tar out of the pagan festival named after the mother of God and the queen of heaven in the Babylonian religion, Easter. I found this article terribly painful. And I found it painful because all of the polls that have been conducted over the last few years show that between 60 and 80% of Americans have come to realize that religion is a fraud. They've come to realize that politicians are frauds. They've come to realize that the Department of Justice and police and the court system cannot be trusted. They've come to reject the credibility of all of these human institutions. But yet, we read some cheerful numbers to consider this weekend. And it says cheerful. Why would they say cheerful? I don't know what is cheerful about this. I can tell you that God's not laughing. This makes God very sad. Makes me sad. 80% of Americans will celebrate Easter, providing $16.4 billion to the economy. That includes $2.2 billion on jelly beans, chocolate bunnies, and peeps alone, and $2.9 billion on fancy hats, new shoes, and suits. When the shopping is done, the average celebrant spends $141 all on those many Easter necessities. So says the National Retail Federation. Who are you dressing up for? Satan? I mean, he loves Easter. Are you dressing up and playing Easter and trotting out the Easter bunny, a bunny that lays eggs, in absolute harmony with the way that Ishtar was celebrated in Babylon, with a egg-laying bunny? Are you going to eat the Easter ham just as it was celebrated in Babylon? Are you really that intent on pissing God off? You know, I received an email from the realtors that we have marking our home in the Central California coast, a very professional group of people. And the son of the lead agent, who is wise beyond his years, very professional young man, we were corresponding back and forth on business issues yesterday. And one of his emails, even though he's an agnostic, he said, happy Easter Sunday. And I said, well, you know, everything you said in your email is true and good, except I don't celebrate Easter. And we ended up having quite the conversation, but it's amazing how many emails I received yesterday from people saying, happy Easter! ! It's just amazing how easy it is to dupe the majority of people. Now, there is no question whatsoever that there's no Easter in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, therefore no Easter associated with Yahweh, that Yahusha most certainly did not celebrate Easter, and that there's no mention of Easter or anything remotely related to Easter, even in the Christian New Testament. Easter is derived entirely from Babylon. It was accepted by the Roman Catholic Church for the express purpose of making the Roman religion meld into the new terminology that they were developing for Christianity. Christianity was, in effect, based upon the Roman and Greek religions that were so popular and so prevalent at the time. Easter simply followed the festival of Dionysus. Same time of year, exact same events, celebrated for the same reason as the festival of Dionysus, who is the model upon which the Christian Jesus Christ was based. There isn't any dunderhead. There is no person on this planet that is ill-equipped, should they have any interest in knowing the truth, from recognizing that there is no basis whatsoever to associate Easter with God, and that Easter is wholly and completely Babylonian, the very culture, the very religion that Yahweh condemns, calls it Babel, calls it confusion, tells us to walk away from it before we can even consider engaging in a relationship with him. And yet here in America, where everybody has access to the internet, has access to libraries, has access to learning to read so that they can study these things, 80% of Americans are still duped into believing something that is so obviously untrue, so obviously false, so obviously counterproductive. Lots of times I have Christians just slander me as I tell them the truth, saying there's no way that you alone can be right and that billions of people can be wrong. You know, how is it? That is always their go-to line after they have been inundated with proof after proof that their religion is absolutely and irrefutably fraudulent. They always go back to the same thing. How is it that you want me to believe that you know the truth and that billions of people are wrong? Well, here's perfect proof. 1.2 billion Roman Catholics celebrating the pagan festival of Easter on Sunday, named after the sun god. Dionysus was obviously, he was the son of the sun. And then you have another billion or so Christians all celebrating the holiest day on their calendar. 80% of Americans aren't even Christian, and they're duped into it. So there you go. Lies have always been popular. If you ever go about assessing truth to that which is popular, taking popularity into account when determining whether something is true or false, and you think that something's popularity indicates that it's truthful, you will be wrong almost all of the time, because most people have been beguiled. This is true throughout human history. It remains true today. You know, Yosha destroyed any possibility for Christianity in the Sermon on the Mount. And he did so when he said, you know, do not think that I came to annul the Torah. I came to enable it, to fulfill it, to honor it. So not a single jot or tittle, not a single letter or fraction of a letter is going to be done away with in the Torah so long as the heavens and earth exist. And then he added to that by saying, the way is popular, broad, that leads to death and destruction. But the way is very narrow, goes against the crowd, that leads to life. There is no more popular religion in all of human history than Christianity. Second to Christianity in terms of popularity is Islam. By Yosha's own definition, by his words, that makes Christianity and Islam irrefutably wrong. And of course, today, I would say that should you define it as I do, socialist secular humanism, with its moral code, with its doctrine, with its sense of right and wrong, is the world's most popular religion, and it, too, will lead to the death and destruction of its souls. Yes, there's a poll. On Easter Sunday, 58% will gather with friends and family. 54% cook a holiday feast. 51% will go to church. And 42% will watch TV. 31% will stage an Easter egg hunt. And 15% will go out to eat. 7% will take in a movie. 4% must work. And 3% will simply do nothing. Wow. 54% will cook a holiday feast. Where were you when Yahweh invited you to the feast of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim? Why didn't you answer his invitation? After all, he's God. Why would you reject God's invitation to meet and celebrate a feast with him, and yet you're going to have a feast over a Babylonian, pagan, despicable holiday? Good God, what's wrong with you folks? 50+%. 58, actually. Almost 60. Corrupting their family. Corrupting their friends. Pissing God off. I mean, there are some holidays where you can say, all right, you know, we're going to go ahead we're going to bring family together during the time that Christmas is normally celebrated. And you can say, we're going to do that because our whole society gives everyone that time off. So if your sons and daughters or mothers and fathers or whatever you might be in your stage in life, age-wise and career-wise, whatever you might be, it's a time that everybody gets off. So you can, I don't have any problem with people saying, let's get together as family, let's celebrate family and join in a meal at that time. So long as you're not celebrating Christmas, not a big deal. But good God, there is nothing about Easter that justifies that. It falls on a Sunday after all. And to go to church That godforsaken place? A place named after the daughter of Helios, Shersh, the sun goddess, in the northern European religions? God doesn't have a church. He despises the place. Despises the institution. Egg-laying bunnies. You know, folks, bunnies don't lay eggs. The Easter bunny goes back to the Ishtar bunny because bunnies were fertility-oriented. The sun crosses over Taurus the bull, the constellation of Taurus the bull, during the spring equinox. And it's said that during that time, Mother Earth is impregnated so that 9 months later on the winter solstice, Christmas, the son of the sun can be born. And so fertility gods and goddesses were derived to celebrate this time. The bunny makes a lot of offspring. You know why the bunny has so much offspring? Because its role is to be prey. Bunnies are the food source for larger carnivores. They make tons of offspring because they have no defense. They're food. They're to be consumed. You're being played for a fool. Yeah, the Babylonians used to take those that eggs, which then they associated with their fertility god bunnies, and they dyed them in all sorts of colors to simulate spring. They would even dye them in children's blood. That was their favorite. And today you go merrily and say, oh, but that's not what it means to me. It don't matter what it means to you. It matters that it's wrong, that it's religious, that it's Babylonian, that it's corrupt. And while you are engaged in Babylonian practices, ladies and gentlemen, you cannot engage in a relationship with God. He won't tolerate it. You can't know him. He won't know you. You can't talk to him. He won't listen to you. He's not going to respond to you. You cannot be saved. So for that 60% of Americans who are celebrating this as a religious feast, who are going to church, who are meeting and corrupting family and friends, who are doing Easter egg hunts, I've got good news and bad news. The bad news is that while you're engaged in such behavior, God is unknowable to you. You can't engage in a relationship with him. You cannot be saved. Now, the good news is that Yahweh's instructions to us, recognizing our flawed nature, are always written in the imperfect, which means the moment you stop, you are no longer precluded. I had a history of celebrating these things. I was a devout Christian. But you know, I stopped. I disassociated from them. And the moment you do, you're good with God. At that point, you're free to get to know him, to engage in a relationship with him. Just don't ever do it again. This article says, and in an unrelated matter, 2/3 of the Americans prefer solid chocolate bunnies to the hollow kind, and 89% eat the ears first. 81% of parents admit snitching candy from their child's Easter basket. All this according to the National Confectioners Association. Wonderful, huh? A State Department official of the United States, I think that the U.S. State Department is probably second in the list of American malfeasance in terms of on the corrupt scale, on the counterproductive scale. I would put the CIA and NSA at number one, most corrupt American institution. You know, the fact that the NSA claims to be defending the Constitution by breaking every aspect of the Constitution, and the fact that the CIA is not only counterproductive, but actually endorses and engages in torture. I'm going to put the CIA as the single most corrupt institution in America. And it's hard not to put the U.S. military or Department of Justice, Homeland Security, in the second spot. I mean, either one of them, the Department of Justice and all of the federal agents associated with it, the court system in America, and the Defense Department could easily, with all of its counterproductive activity and malfeasance and deception and death and destruction, that either one of those two could be in a second position. But for my money, the second worst institution in America is the State Department. Well, the State Department official dismissed a plea Friday from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that Iran's nuclear agreement include clear recognition of Israel's right to exist, declaring negotiations only about the nuclear issue. State Department spokesman Marie Harf, in a terse response to a question about Netanyahu's concerns, told reporters, "This is an agreement that only is about the nuclear issue," a comment that indicates Obama administration is not looking to enshrine Israel's security into the final agreement. You know, in reality, there's only one country that Iran has threatened to obliterate with its nuclear capability. Israel. Israel and Iran's nuclear ambition are parallel. While most Islamic countries are vehemently anti-Israel, there is no country that is more outspoken against Israel. There is no country that has at its national level, at its highest political and religious level, has emphasized publicly that Israel's destruction is their ultimate ambition, other than Iran. Iran is first and foremost in that regard. And there's no question that fueling the nuclear program in Iran is the thought that they could be Allah's assassins with a nuclear bomb. So Netanyahu is absolutely right. The whole issue is Israel and Israel's right to exist. If you resolve that, then Iran with a nuclear bomb, while bad, isn't immediately destructive. It's the biggest part of the whole issue. It's vastly more important than how many centrifuges they have, how much nuclear fuel above 20% fissile purity they can retain.
We've talked about this before, though. Iran's not going to use it on them.
I don't think so. That's not that. Not because they don't want to.
Yeah, not because they don't want to, but because it kind of defeats, like,
yeah,
the wind.
Benjamin Netanyahu doesn't know that. 99.999% of the world doesn't know that. I mean, most people, including the Abominator, suspect that their purpose of developing the bomb is to destroy Israel. So you and I know, because we've read Yahweh's playbook, that Yahweh describes what Israel is going to be like. And he describes nuclear holocaust, but I don't see, based upon his terminology, the nuclear holocaust taking place in Israel. It appears to me that Israel will be subject to chemical and biological weapons. It'll be subject to millions, probably hundreds of millions, of Islamic jihadists flooding into the country, raping, plundering, destroying, murdering, during the period of the tribulation, probably beginning in the spring of 2027, when the tribulation will begin in the fall of 2026. So, Team Islam going to do exactly what Team Islam is currently doing. They're going to rape, they're going to plunder, they're going to commit mass murder, they're going to be enraged, they're going to be belligerent. They're going to do what they've always done. But it is unlikely that they will nuke Israel. I do think it is much more likely that Iran will deploy a nuclear weapon in Europe or the United States or some other country, but primarily those targets. And there's also the possibility that they would nuke Saudi Arabia, because the Saudi Arabians are going to develop nuclear bombs if they don't already have them. And they've said so, that they're wholly opposed to the Abominator's plan. And that as a result of the Abominator's plan, they are now committed to a nuclear arsenal. And so you could see Saudi Arabia and Iran nuking each other. You know, that would make a lot of sense, in that that would take Sunni Islam and rid Sunni Islam of its Shia rival. If you take out Iran, there is no basis for Shia Islam anymore. You take out, you know, 80% of the Shia Muslims who only represent 15 to 20% of Islam anyway. And that would, if Saudi Arabia and Iran engage in a nuclear exchange, Shia Islam is over. And also, we don't see Saudi Arabia participating in the assault on Israel. But we do, according to Yahweh's testimony, see the oil fields of Saudi Arabia burning. So it would make perfect sense that this is going to lead to a nuclear exchange, but probably not with Israel. But it is interesting how the State Department, being anti-Israel, came back with a terse response. No, you weren't part of the negotiations. We're not going to include you now. We didn't do any of this for you, and we're going to cut you no slack because the U.S. State Department hates Israel. So I share this, as Scott knows, we recognize that there aren't going to be a nuclear, there's not going to be a nuclear bomb going off in Israel. But this is still relevant because it demonstrates the attitude of the United States State Department towards Israel, as does the Obaminator.
It really shows you their attitude towards everything, though.
Yes.
Edward Snowden and the stuff that he released, they were very kind of the same response, things like that. We do that for your safety. Yeah. I mean, it's how the government deals with everything.
Yeah. There was a... I have not read this article yet on this program, but I will someday. It might even show up in today's news. I get up early in the morning and I read news stories. I clip the parts that I thought are appropriate and I put them into a Word document. I don't know where this story is buried now in my Word document, but that report has the direct quote from the individual that is referenced in this and says, that Iran's military chief said just last week, this is the top Iranian military official, said in front of cameras, he was recorded, Iran's top military official. We're not talking about some lowlife. We're talking about Iran's top military official. He was quoted before cameras saying, erasing Israel off the map is non-negotiable. You imagine that? Erasing Israel off the map, destroying the nation, which is the entire purpose of the nuclear program. In the midst of their nuclear negotiations, he wanted the world to know that erasing Israel off the map is not negotiable. Now, he's the head of Iran's military. So you don't think that Iran's intent with their nuclear weapon is to destroy Israel? You would have to be either grotesquely ignorant or hopelessly irrational to form any other conclusion that the entire purpose of Iran's nuclear program is to make bombs for the express purpose of obliterating Israel. Yet Netanyahu's request, where he said the survival of Israel is non-negotiable, and God would agree, that the top Iranian military official, just as the Obaminator was trying to position his final draft of the outline for a deal, said the destruction of Israel is non-negotiable. Wow. Erasing Israel off the map is non-negotiable. By the way, for those who would applaud the Obaminator in getting a deal that puts off the Iranian development of a bomb by 10 years so that they get their bomb the same year the tribulation begins, you need to know this. There's no deal with Iran. 9 months ago, when the Obaminator celebrated his breakthrough deal with Iran, there was no deal with Iran. All they had was an outline to negotiate a deal in the future. And they had an outline of what they were trying to achieve. And the outline said, unless everything is resolved and all parties agree to every aspect of what is finally drafted, then there is no deal. But between now and then, you can lift the sanctions. Thank you very much. In this new deal, it's only an outline. It's an outline that describes the goals of the negotiation, and that the drafting of the actual deal hasn't even begun. All they have is an outline, an agreement to work towards a deal, just like they did about a year ago. That's what they're celebrating. All Iran has done is liberated their cash reserves, have freed their ability to sell oil on the international markets, and have bought time to continue to enrich uranium and complete all of their nuclear preparations so that they can achieve their ultimate goal, to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. In other news, on April 1st, the city of Tikrit was liberated from the Islamic State, or so the Reuters article reads. The Shiite-led central government, in other words, the Iranian central government, and allied Shiite militias, after a month-long battle, expelled the barbarous Sunni radicals. Well, they're not radicals, and they are barbarous because they're Muslims. Then the liberators took revenge. Near the charred, bullet-scarred government headquarters, two federal policemen flanked a suspected Islamic State fighter. Urged on by a furious mob, the two officers took out knives and repeatedly stabbed the man that they had shackled to death. They stabbed him in the neck. They slit his throat. These are the police that America trained, that America has put in fancy uniforms, that America has armed, working for the government that America is bombing on behalf of, that our tax dollars are supporting. Since its recapture 2 days ago, the Sunni city of Tikrit has been the scene of violence and looting by the Shias that America is supporting. In addition to the killing of many Sunni mujahideen, Reuters correspondents also saw a convoy of Shiite paramilitary fighters, the government's partners in liberating the city from, I don't know how they're figuring they're liberating the city. The city is mostly Sunni. And now Shias have taken over the city because of the American firepower that has been provided to them. So the city is now under a tyranny of the minority. It was under a tyranny of the majority, and now it's under a tyranny of the minority. I don't know how in any circumstance that's a liberation. The government's partners, let me say, they dragged corpses through the street behind their cars. See, Islam is a celebration of death. It is a death cult. It always has been. It began that way. Local officials say that the mayhem continues. Looting, murders, arson, rapes. Two security officials, speaking on condition of anonymity, said on Friday that dozens upon dozens of homes had been torched in the city, with the residents burned inside, alive. They added that they had witnessed the looting of stores throughout the city by the Shiite militiamen, whom America is supporting. These are the very Shiite militiamen. The only ones left in Tikrit were the Badr Brigade. They were the Shiites most responsible for murdering Americans. Fallujah was perpetrated by them, where they took two Americans, killed them in a despicable way, and then had crowds of women and children take sticks and beat them prior to burning their bodies, dragging them behind cars, and then hanging those lifeless corpses from the girders of a bridge. That was the same brigade that America is now arming and equipping that is committing acts of rape, torture, murder, arson, and robbery. It is why you can't engage in the Islamic world without creating a bigger mess than you resolved. Kirk, I'd ask you this question.
Yes, sir.
Do you have a way that America can engage in the world of Islam and make a positive difference?
Could never happen.
Never.
I've listened to IQ and you.
Yeah, and it is supplying weapons to both sides. Is that the solution?
It hasn't. That's never worked in history. It makes good money for the banks, but that's about it. For the long people.
Why would America supply all of these weapons, start bombing on behalf of, and coordinate attacks with Iranian paramilitary units in Iraq when the head of Iran's military said obliterating Israel, wiping it off the map, is a non-negotiable?
You have to hate Israel.
Yeah, you do.
You have to hate Israel. No other answer.
Yeah, no other answer. When you hate Israel, what does God say is going to happen to you?
Well, he's going to turn against you, but you're hating the thing that he loves the most, the place he loves the most, and the people that he selected.
Right. So bless those that bless thee, curse those that curse thee.
Curse thee. Mm-hmm.
So that's not a good omen.
Not
for America,
at all.
Is it?
Not at all.
We'll be back. We'll be back with Kirk after the break.